Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong. It's bringing mercy. It won't be long. Healing rain is coming down. It's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name.
Good morning and welcome to The Cross in the Desert, where we're speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. Welcome to a very special edition of The Cross in the Desert. This is part five of a special live reading of my new book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. We continue now on page 58. A Prison of Fear. Mir Nusha's story. I was suffocating. I couldn't breathe. My house was like a prison to me. Unlike most marriages, Mir Nusha's marriage was, as she describes, a prison of fear. Growing up in Iran, at the age of 20, Mir Nusha met Abbas. He seemed like the perfect man, handsome, wealthy, educated, and yet, as the old cliche goes, looks can be deceiving. Abbas went to work every day like the normal husband, but would call Mir Nusha repeatedly from work to check up on her. Soon, he turned into a monster, becoming jealous, possessive, and controlling. Mir Nusha became a prisoner in her own home, having to obtain permission to leave. Things quickly became worse. Abbas began to physically abuse her. Desperate to escape, Mir Nusha called the police, crying out for help. But instead of responding to her cries, they ignored them, and Mir Nusha continued to be a helpless victim. In Iran, women are treated like second-class citizens. They must wear a hijab publicly and adhere to a strict dress code, which includes not showing too much skin or too much makeup. The morality police patrol the streets of Iran daily, and if a woman is not properly wearing her hijab and is in violation of the dress code, she can be fined, arrested, and publicly lashed. After several reports to the police, Mir Nusha was finally allowed to see a judge and report the physical abuse. However, instead of getting justice, she instead got a lecture from the judge. "Why are you here?" the judge demanded. "You should not be complaining to the court about your husband." Mir Nusha was devastated. She felt helpless. "Women are not treated like human beings in Iran," Mir Nusha remembers thinking. "We are treated like animals, like possessions." The judge continued to lecture Mir Nusha. "Your husband is your owner," he declared, ignoring the obvious marks of physical abuse on her face. Even though Mir Nusha felt helpless and despaired, she understood why she was being treated in such a manner. This was consistent with the teachings of the Quran and the Islamic culture she was living in. "I hated Islam." Mir Nusha hated Islam because of the way Muslim men treated their wives. She remembered reading Surah 4 in the Quran, quote, "As to those women on whose part you fear disloyalty and ill conduct, admonish them first, next, refuse to share their beds, and last, beat them." Surah chapter 4, verse 34. What kind of God would instruct a husband to beat his wife? Mirnoush asked herself with anger and frustration. The abuse continued. Mirnoush struggled to survive. Every day of every moment, Mirnoush cried out, I was sad and crying. I prayed all of the time but felt trapped with no possible way out. For Mirnoush, life had become a living hell, filled with darkness and despair. A year later, she gave birth to her first son and named him Mirsam, that is, nicknamed Sammy. However, her life didn't change. There was still turmoil and abuse. Desperate for her life and the safety of her son, Sammy, Mirnoush met some people. They promised to help her. What can only be described as a miraculous answer to her prayer, she paid them a large sum of money and they smuggled both her and her son out of Iran to Sweden, where the rest of her family was living. Sweden was a haven for Iranian refugees, and Mirnoush believed she would finally be safe and rid of her abusive husband once and for all. However, to her astonishment, Abbas followed her to Sweden, where he confronted her, and once again, the physical abuse began. This time, however, the Swedish police immediately responded, and Abbas was arrested, tried, and imprisoned for 2 months before finally being deported back to Iran. Mirnoush felt now that she was finally safe, but because of the many years of trauma and abuse, she felt like that she was still in prison. Even though she had left the oppression of living in Iran, Mirnoush still felt trapped. Life in Sweden still felt like the prison of Iran. Quote, I was afraid to walk down the street. I was afraid that a boss would suddenly jump out at me. I was living in a prison of fear, even in Sweden. Then one day, Mirnoush's life took a drastic change for the better. She walked into a church and heard Christians singing and praising God. Mirnoush was astonished. She had never experienced or heard of Christians singing to their God. She had been taught in Islam that music was haram or forbidden, and yet, when she heard the music, she immediately felt a deep sense of peace and belonging. When the pastor began to teach, she was impressed by what he said. The pastor quoted the teachings of Jesus from the Bible about loving and forgiving your enemies. Mirnoush was drawn to the words of Christ, especially the command to, quote, love your enemies. What a contrast! What a difference, Mirnoush thought to herself. Christianity teaches to forgive, and it's so much different than that which Islam teaches. Mirnoush recalls that she never directly asked Jesus for help, but very soon, quote, he sent me my angel. The fear of men had tormented Mirnoush, and she could not talk to any male attorneys. A woman named Alina was finally appointed to her case. She was like an angel, a true friend, and she went out of her way to review her case, secure her documents from Iran, and begin the process of residency for her. Mirnoush was still a refugee, and she understood that the road to residency was a difficult one. Very soon, the Bible became a precious book for Mirnoush. She fell in love with Jesus. She was impressed by the compassion and love that he showed women. I was once dead, and now I am alive. On April 27, 2014, Mirnoush became a member of the local church and was baptized. Everyone noticed the immediate change in her. She had a joy and a peace that she never had before. Unlike most Iranians who declare they are Christians and are baptized just to escape Iran and gain residency, Mirnoush never needed to do that. Her case was progressing thanks to Alina, her dear angel lawyer. Mirnoush described to me her inward feeling. She said, quote, I was once dead, and now I'm alive. Her favorite Bible verse is Psalm 46, verse 1, quote, God is our refuge, God is our strength, a very present help in trouble. I have had the privilege of knowing Mirnoush for about 6 months. She is very hopeful that one day soon she will be granted residency in Sweden. Every day I share with her a Bible verse on Viber. She now has a bright and jubilant smile instead of a frown of despair. Jesus has indeed brought her out of death and given her a new life. She no longer is living in a prison of fear. Happy Nowruz to my Iranian friends. Give me wings of freedom so I can fly. I want to fly high. I want to soar. Give me wings of freedom or let me die. I want to touch the sky. I want to soar. The Rose of Nowruz. March 20th marks the first day of spring and the official beginning of the Persian New Year for my Iranian friends. Nowruz, or literally New Day, is the title of the spring festival that ushers in the beginning of another year in the Persian calendar. Rooted in the rich history of Zoroastrian religion, Nowruz is the cherished time of spring renewal, which includes eating and celebrating with families. In preparation, Iranians busily engage in house cleaning and shopping for clothes to look their best for the great New Year's event. One of the central features of Nowruz is the half-seen table. Iranians erect a small table in their home and, according to tradition, place items on the table that begin with the letter S. Sabiz, lentil sprouts, are placed in a dish of water symbolizing rebirth. Sib, or apples, are placed next on the table, which symbolizes beauty and health. Samanu, tasty pudding, is added to the table, symbolizing affluence. Sukkah, or vinegar, is added to the table, symbolizing old age and patience. Sir, that is garlic, is a very important addition, symbolizing medicine for healing. Sinjez, wild olive fruit, symbolizes love. And sumac is the final item placed on the table, symbolizing the color of sunrise. The half-seen table is rich in symbolism and sets the mood for the beginning of the Persian New Year. In 2013, I published a very important book to bring awareness to the Western world about the struggle of my Iranian friends for human rights and freedom. The Rose of Nowruz, Dreams of Hope and Freedom, is the story of a young concert violinist named Bahara who lives in Tehran. The beautiful red rose was Bahara's favorite flower, and she composes a song about a rose as the symbol of freedom during the Nowruz celebration. Desperate to see her friends have freedom from an oppressive government, Bahara can no longer be silent and becomes a human rights activist in the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Since the publication, I have had the incredible privilege of sending the PDF files of my books to my friends in Iran, including human rights groups in Canada. 1393, the Persian calendar, marks the official start of the new year. But what can my Iranian friends expect this year? What kind of hope do they have? Will they finally see an end to the oppression and fear? Will they finally realize their hopes and dreams? 1393 begins with Hassan Rouhani as the new president in Iran. During the election last year, he campaigned as a moderate, promising some social and economic freedoms, but his track record thus far is anything but moderate. Since becoming president, executions have spiked. Over 687 prisoners were put to death last year. Political activists, human rights defenders, journalists, and bloggers are still behind bars, being punished for speaking out and forced now to keep silent. Campaigning as a moderate assured Rouhani of a victory and prevented a repeat of the violence in the last election and once again gave the Islamic Republic of Iran control of its people. In spite of the failed promises of Rouhani, my Iranian friends gaze at their half-seen tables, looking for hope and freedom. They celebrate in the midst of a society that deprives them of their basic human rights to dress, speak, and believe as they choose. This year, I decorated my Facebook page with pictures of half-seen tables and did a special radio program celebrating the new year with them. I was supposed to be a guest at the home of one of my dear Iranian friends via Skype for the start of Nowruz, but internet problems prevented that cherished event from happening. So instead, I put the picture of her table on my timeline and dedicated my page to her. My friends in Iran are the most precious friends in the world to me. My blogs and books are all about them. They are the focus and passion of my life. This is my New Year's special prayer for them. My dear friends in Iran, I pray your new year is filled with peace, prosperity, and freedom. As you gather together with your families this year and sit around your half-seen tables, please don't forget that I'm thinking of you and praying for you. I am praying that God will give you the desires of your hearts and that your dreams and visions for the future will one day be finally realized. I am praying that one day you will have a free Iran where you can walk down the streets without fear of being monitored, without fear of being stopped because of the way you dress. I am praying for the day that you can believe as you choose, that you can speak your mind without fear of imprisonment. I am praying for the day that you will have true freedom. I believe that day will come, my dear Iranian friends. I know that God hears the cries of your hearts. Your lives are precious to him. He will deliver you from all fear and oppression. I wanted to leave you with a promise from the Bible describing that day of freedom that I have spoken to you about. Quote, I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, Look, God's throne is now among his people. He will live with them, and they will be his people. God himself will be with them. He will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever. And the one sitting on the throne said, Look, I am making everything new. And he said to me, Write this down, for what I tell you is trustworthy and true. Revelation chapter 21, verses 3 through 5. My dear Iranian friends, this is a promise from our great God. He cannot lie. What he promises will happen. It is absolutely true. I want to assure you that one day your pain and suffering will finally come to an end. This promise is guaranteed to everyone who puts their hope and faith in Jesus. I know this from my own life. Jesus has given me a peace and an assurance that has sustained me through the dark and difficulty trials of my life. Jesus is that rose of Nauruz that can give you hope for the future. He is trustworthy and true. Da Panahikota, I pray that the Lord takes care of you. Be Parvadajer Misperamit. God bless you. Happy New Year. Betrayed but not forgotten, the continuing crisis of Saeed Abedini. I never anticipated that I would have to battle my own government to secure his freedom. In a tone of despair and frustration, Nagma Abedini publicly proclaimed her outrage during her testimony at the congressional hearings concerning the fate of her husband Saeed, who has spent the last 444 days of his life in an Iranian prison. Nagma feels betrayed by her own government. Just recently, when Secretary of State John Kerry met with Iranian Foreign Minister Zarif in Geneva for the nuclear talks, the opportunity for a good faith initiative between the United States and Iran was right there at the table, but nothing happened. The American Center for Law and Justice, the ACLJ, representing Saeed and his wife Negma, was astonished that the United States passed by a golden opportunity to secure the relief of Saeed as a precondition before any negotiation for Iran's nuclear program was discussed. Instead, Iran was put on a six-month probation, and the weight of the international sanctions were eased against them, restoring millions of dollars to their economic woes. The Obama administration was satisfied that after 34 years, a new relationship with Iran was finally emerging, and there was finally hope. But there was just one problem. An American citizen was left behind in the midst of the celebration, and instead of addressing the horrors of the Iranian human rights violations, the United States instead rejoiced in the success of a major nuclear arms agreement. While Iran and the United States shook hands, Saeed continues to experience deteriorating health conditions, internal bleeding, and torture after being transferred to Rajar Shahar prison in Karaj, Iran. Rajar Shahar is home to murderers, drug addicts, and rapists on death row, placing Saeed in a very dangerous environment. The Iranian regime puts prisoners there that they want to disappear in an atmosphere of silent execution, depriving them of any medical treatment or drugs, and eventually they either die from disease or at the hands of other violent inmates. Even though that it appears that our government has betrayed Saeed by not mentioning him in the nuclear negotiations with Iran, there is one dear friend of mine who has not forgotten him. For security reasons, I cannot mention her name except to say she lives in Tehran. She is secretly a Christian. We have texted each other many times, and I have helped my friend by sending her translations of the Bible in the Farsi language. A few weeks ago, my friend listened to my radio program, The Cross in the Desert. The topic on that program was about Saeed and the nuclear talks. After listening, my dear friend sent me a beautiful email in which she shared her heart with me about the desperate situation of Saeed. The following message is exactly in her own words. Quote, "I just heard your radio program, Randy. It made me sad because I realized how indifferent I am. And I have no fault because when you live here, you learn that if you want to stay safe, you have to be indifferent. The problems here are too much. We citizens are drawn into so many problems, and yet we don't dare complain. We do not dare to defend innocent people in prison like Saeed. We have to remain silent and just watch. I pray for this innocent man. I pray for his freedom. May God bring freedom for all of us. Amen." Words cannot adequately express how much I appreciate my dear friend's honesty. In the midst of being forgotten by his government, Saeed has a true friend living right there in the heart of Iran, a beautiful young 21-year-old university student who desires to speak out publicly for him, but has to remain silent in fear for her life. Yet, my friend is praying for Saeed. She has not forgotten him. My beautiful friend's message of love and prayer for Saeed should stand as a rebuke to our government. They ought to be ashamed for not speaking up for their own citizen and doing everything possible to demand his release. Even though my government failed to speak for Saeed, my friend didn't. She let her voice and prayers be heard in a country that would immediately imprison her for making her views public. What courage, what conviction. God bless you, my dear friend, for not forgetting Saeed. Embracing your trials. When trouble comes your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For when you know that your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 3. I think all of us would agree that life is filled with tests, trials, sorrows, and disappointments. Whether it's the loss of a job, the death of a loved one, or facing a life-threatening illness like cancer, none of us are exempt from the everyday trials and tribulations that find a way to interrupt our hectic lives. Suffering and trials come our way, and the question is, how will we respond to them? My Facebook friend, Nagma Abedini, says that we should embrace our trials. Most of us, if we were honest, would rebel at such a proposition. It's human nature to want to run from trials and avoid them. Trials interrupt our comfort zone, creating chaos and fear. And our first reaction is to run from them, not embrace them. Recently, Nagma Abedini was a guest on my live blog talk radio program, The Cross in the Desert. Nagma is the wife of Pastor Saeed Abedini, who is suffering for his Christian faith in prison in Iran. Nagma knows firsthand what trials and tribulations are all about. She has been separated from her husband for over 2 years and is left to raise their two beautiful children, Rebecca and Jacob. Her life has been turned upside down, but Nagma has chosen to face her circumstances head on without fear. Instead of running away from the pain and suffering, Nagma has boldly faced her trials by fully trusting in Christ. She has been very busy appearing at churches, media outlets, TV programs to fight for her husband's freedom and speak out for the human rights of persecuted Christians all over the world. Through the incredible support of her Facebook friends, Nagma has organized a national prayer-wide vigil for her husband that will take place on September 26th. When I asked Nagma how she coped and handled the pressures of trials, she immediately responded by proclaiming that, quote, "We should embrace our trials instead of running from them. When we embrace our trials, our faith and endurance will grow. This will be a great testimony to the watching world of the power of Christ in our lives. We can be an encouragement and example to what others are going through when we embrace our trials." Nagma is right. This is what the scriptures teach. James admonishes us in the midst of trials to, quote, "consider it an opportunity for great joy." Why should James instruct us to embrace our trials with joy? Trials are anything but joyful. Sometimes they are very painful. James gives us the reason to have a joyful attitude. He says, quote, "When your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow," end quote. Trials perfect our faith and draw us closer to dependence on God. Trials, our faith would have not an opportunity to grow. Let's face it. Trials reveal if our faith is genuine, and for the Christian, that is a very important test to pass. The writer of Hebrews declared that, quote, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross." Hebrews chapter 12, verse 3. How could the pain and agony of the cross be an occasion for joy? The cross was a punishment of cruel death, yet Jesus embraced his suffering and trial, knowing that his sacrificial death would bring salvation to the world. On the night before his suffering, Jesus prayed, "If it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me." All of us can learn a valuable example from Nagma of the patient endurance. Trials are never easy, but we have a perfect Savior who embraced them, and because of that, we can now have an intimate relationship with God. Thus, this ends the reading today, part 5 from my new book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. And today, we heard from Mayor Noosh, talked about the Nowruz celebration, and heard also from Nagma Abedini. Next time, we're going to continue in part 6 as we make our way through the book and hear more from my dear Iranian friends. I want to thank you so much for spending time with me this morning on the cross in the desert and listening to those heartbreaking stories of my friends who live behind the Iron Curtain of the Islamic Republic of Iran. God bless you. I will see you very soon again on the cross in the desert.
Healing rain is coming down, is coming nearer to this old town, to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong, it's bringing mercy, it won't be long.